Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 219 of the Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah. How you doing?
I'm great. Today we are talking about the fear of missing out, FOMO.
I am familiar.
You are familiar with the FOMO?
Yes. Yeah.
When we were planning this and talking about it, I already said the word FOMO so many times.
I'm already tired of the word. Well, didn't we just do an episode where we talked about why everything has to have a cutesy word now? And
yes.
Now here we are yet again promoting a cutesy word, but whatever.
With an acronym. I mean, it is a real thing, and it really does affect motherhood and parenting. And so this is a great topic to discuss today. We are doing this as a fun collaboration with our friends over at the Coffee and Crumbs podcast. So our listeners, if you are not familiar with Coffee and Crumbs, you should definitely go check them out. They are also discussing motherhood and FOMO today. Their episodes drop on Tuesdays, just like ours. So go look for Coffee and Crumbs. The hosts are Ashley, April, and Indiana, and you will just love them. And they'll have very different things to say about motherhood and FOMO. So we didn't coordinate what to say. We just kind of chose the same prompt to inspire this episode. So yeah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. And if you're coming over from Coffee and Crumbs, welcome. I hope that you guys who are new listeners enjoy us. I think that we have a nice complementary relationship with them because we talk about the same kinds of things, but from a different angle. So
yeah. And our kids are a little bit older. We're in different areas of the country and all of that.
Yeah.
So we should probably introduce ourselves real quick in case anybody's brand new. Like, so tell everybody how many kids you have and stuff.
Okay. So I'm Megan. I'm Megan. I live in southwestern Michigan. I have 5 kids. They are ages 10 through 21. So I've been in the trenches a long, long time. And now I'm in a very different kind of life than many of you with little kids. And my 4 older ones are boys and my youngest is my only girl. So that's fun too.
That is very fun. So I am Sarah. I live in Southern California in Orange County. I'm mostly a California person, although I did long stints in Chicago and also Arizona, where I had my 3 babies. They are now 11, 9, and 6.5. So I am still in the middle years, the elementary school years.
I think you're in the gravy years.
Yeah, that's what I keep hearing. It's really good.
It's only worse from here.
One fun fact about me is all 3 of my kids go to the same school on the same schedule and will be that way for a total of 4 years. I feel like that's like
amazing.
Some kind of accomplishment. And a lot of you out there are probably looking ahead to those days.
Yeah. And it's funny. I actually don't think I ever had that long because I had so many kids that by the time the littlest was in kindy, the oldest was already in middle school. So I'm not sure I ever had all my kids in one school. In fact, I know I didn't.
Yeah, that would be hard to accomplish with 5. But even if 3 of your 5 were.
Yes. So. Yes. Now they're in 3 different schools.
Yeah. Anyway, we are glad all of you are here, our longtime listeners and anybody new who's come over from Coffee and Crumbs. And so we are going to get started talking about motherhood and FOMO after a quick break. Megan, I'm going to come out and say it. One of the biggest sources of frustration I've had in parenting little kids is battles of will over clothing.
Oh my gosh.
I have 2 kids who are really sensitive to the way fabrics feel, and keeping them comfortable while appropriately clothed seems like it requires like some kind of an advanced degree in both textiles, but also maybe like conflict resolution.
Oh my gosh. And can I just say that while we've been recording this episode, I have an itchy tag on my side and I'm like, why are there 7 tags in my shirt? And why is one of them in the most sensitive skin on my entire body? So I feel for these kids.
I mean, maybe we could solve world peace by removing tags. So anyway, when our sponsor Lucky and Me approached us with an offer to let us try their kids' underwear and clothing before we even talked about sponsorship, I was like, sure, I'm up for that. So you, me, and Kelsey from our team all test drove items from Lucky and Me. They've got undies, leggings, bike shorts, and we were all impressed.
Yeah, Clara got the leggings, and not only were they super cute, but she just fell in love with how comfortable and soft they are, and she's very particular.
So here is why that Lucky and Me clothing is so comfy for sensitive kids. It's made from fabrics that won't itch or irritate the skin. always tagless, tag-free, no tags, and they have several 100% organic options as well. These styles are designed for all-day play with really comfy waistbands and those super soft and breathable fabrics that retain their fit and stretch and color even after washing them and drying them many times. I love the look of their basics, the undies, the leggings, the little bike shorts.
Yeah, they're adorable.
Yeah, and I'm loving these little camisoles for layering for girls as well. So Lucky and Me is going to give our listeners a big-time discount so you can try out their clothes for your kids. Prices are already really reasonable, and they're going to give you guys 25% off your order when you use promo code MOMHOUR25 at luckyandme.com. Again, just head to luckyandme.com and use promo code MOMHOUR25 to save 25% off comfy basics for your kids.
So last year, Sarah turned me on to Jane.com. And as with any new app, it took me forever to actually try it out, but I am so glad I did. Jane is an online boutique daily deals retailer that boasts 350 to 500 deals a day that support 1,500 businesses. I love Jane because you can score amazing deals on fashion, shoes, accessories, and home decor. You just scroll through the app and see what catches your eye. It's a great way to try out a new style that maybe you aren't so sure about because you're going to get a really fantastic price. When I was doing my insane yoga challenge back in January and February, I decided I wanted to get some slouchy oversized tops so I could basically look like the girl out of Flashdance all the time. And I got some from Jane and loved them. They totally hit the mark and they were really inexpensive. Then in the spring, I picked up a few super cute t-shirts and tank tops for about $10 each and some amazingly soft, lightweight leggings that were only $9.99. So of course, now I want them in every color. If you haven't checked out Jane, use our link and you're going to go right to a page with the latest deals in women's fashion. We're part of their affiliate program, which means if you make a purchase through our link, you're also helping to support the podcast too. Head to themomhour.com/Jane and try out a new style or two. Again, that's themomhour.com/Jane. All right. So Sarah, I think before we jump in, because we have a lot of ground to cover, like a lot of different kinds of FOMO and how it relates to motherhood at different stages. But I think because especially new listeners, maybe who don't know anything about us yet, haven't really gotten a taste of our personalities. And so I think it would be really helpful to talk about what inspires FOMO for each of us, which I think is probably very different. Okay, so for me, I'm kind of like, I guess if you had to sum me up, people would probably say of the two, I'm the free spirit. That's not always the case, but like that tends to be like I'm the type B or the type A. That's the, you know, the assumption we kind of go with. So for me, like, FOMO is kind of comes from this general fear of having to shut any doors or not getting to experience like everything. So like at the end of my life, I think it's not regret exactly, but I have this like almost nostalgia for a life I never had. It's like a weird thing that, so I want to experience more than is physically possible for me to experience in one life. That's part of it. But then on the flip side, there's also this like scarcity thing that I have where like if an opportunity is presented to me and I don't do that thing, I'm not 100% sure there'll be another. Like I can't see around the next corner to know that there's something else, which is silly because there always is something else. Right. And I know that, but like my gut instinct sometimes is to just take the thing in front of me and make the best of it. Because if I don't, that might be it.
Right. This might be as good as it ever gets.
Right, exactly.
I think the perfect illustration of this for you, because I know you so well, is how you are with good weather. And so you just have to tell people how you are. So Megan lives in Michigan where, you know, winters are long and even summers can be temperamental. So you watch the weather app and are just always trying to like, is this as good as it's going to get? Should I go be in the sun right now?
I spend a lot of time this time of year maximizing my life. And have you ever done the quiz that tells you if you're a maximizer or something else? There's two. Like that's one of the other, I think it's a Gretchen Rubin thing. Like, so it's like there's types that are maximizers and then there's the other type. And so the maximizer is always trying to get the best out of any situation, like to like grab the nugget and make the best of it. And so for me, I will look at my day and be literally like, I can't work today. It's like 77 degrees outside. I'm going to go sit on a patio somewhere and have a beer, or I'm going to go like kayak, or I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go to the beach. Like I have to take advantage of this because it might not happen again. And the funny thing is, of course it's going to happen. It's going to happen, you know, probably 60 more times this summer that there's going to be a really nice day. But what if on that day I can't do that thing?
Right. Right.
So, you know, it's like, it ends up, I can kind of be very spazzy. Like I'm jumping all over the place, trying to make the most of everything. And that sometimes the irony there, or the, I guess the consequence is that you don't really make the most of anything. So that's something that I struggle with.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am exactly the opposite in many of these ways. I would have first said that I am not someone who experiences FOMO in the traditional sense, because you think of social occasions and not wanting to miss out on fun and, you know, wanting to keep all your options open. And I am sort of the opposite. I actually am quite good at saying no to things. I'm not saying that is a good thing, because I think I can be very self-limiting. I like to know what is going to happen. I like to be able to predict outcomes and control things. And so anybody who relates to that knows you sort of, you put bumpers around your life and your schedule to minimize the chance that something's going to go wrong or you're going to feel out of control. And so I think what's interesting about FOMO is you do end up missing out, and you end up missing out because you have placed these careful boundaries around yourself. So I don't know if it's less of a fear of missing out and more of a risk of missing out, to be honest, that I have to then think about, okay, like where can I push myself to actually have a wider breadth of experience? So very different.
Yeah. And I also want to just quickly talk about the whole, we have it's a very much a buzzword or a trend culturally right now to talk about saying no to things because mm-hmm. you're not obligated to do them. And there is a personality type, and I'm one of them. We're not saying yes to things because we feel obligated. I very rarely do things because I truly feel obligated. I do things because I convince myself I want to. Mm. And those are two different motivators. And I think it's important because yes. when we talk about just say no to this, like you can say no. The reason I might be saying yes is not necessarily the same reason you are. And so the motivation, you have to come at it differently.
Yes.
I don't ever feel like I have to do anything ever. It's like, I think I want to do things I don't actually want to do.
I think that is such a good distinction. And I don't think I've ever thought of it that way, but you're so right. You are not someone who does something just because you ought to. I mean, that's not your right. personality at all, but you do like to say yes to things. The other, I think, piece that fits in with my personality type, and maybe people can relate, is I think there's sort of a FOMO inherent in perfectionism. So I am someone who thrives on doing things really, really well. And so the fear of missing out is on missing out on, doing it perfectly.
Yeah. It's like, no, I see that.
Do you see what I'm saying? So I might say no to something or say yes to something based on whether I think I can do it really well. And the fear then is not doing it well or putting myself, you know, at risk of messing up or screwing up. And so, yeah, I think it's all related.
Well, that definitely plays out in our business relationship because things come my way and I'm like, sounds fun. Let's do it. And you're like, but can we really do it well? And
there's always,
you're like the little angel on my shoulder or maybe the devil on my shoulder or both, depending uh-huh. on the day, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And I always, you're so good because I always have to say that. I always have to say, yeah, but like, should we really do this? And you're like, yes, of course we should. That's so funny. So funny. Well, should we talk about some like big picture types of FOMO that come up in motherhood?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
I have one I want to start with. And this was one that I just experienced at a real visceral level. And so longtime listeners, you might remember this story, but when I had my first baby, I was about 28. I was working full time in kind of a mid-sized corporate situation. I loved my job. I had a lot of growth opportunity and I was the primary breadwinner of the two of us, my husband and I. And so I thought I was for sure going back to work full time. And I also didn't really think about it that much. I just didn't know any stay-at-home moms. I just figured that's what I would do. And then I had my baby and I just remember being up at night just in tears hormonally. I put off choosing a daycare because I had a mental block against all of a sudden I didn't want to go back to work full time. And it really threw me for a loop because I thought that that's what I was going to do and thought that's what I wanted. And so I just kind of had this series of conversations and, you know, crises where I figured out that there was a way for me to go back and work part-time. And it ended up being really great and perfect. And I did it for a couple of years till I had my second baby and then things changed again. But I think this either or thinking about whether and how much to work, especially in new motherhood, whether you have a choice to or not. And a lot of people may not have a choice, but there is so much fear of missing out on both sides, right? And even if, like you said, you're saying yes to the thing you really want to do, there can still be FOMO. You can choose to be staying home full time because that is absolutely what you feel you want to be doing. And you can still have FOMO for that work life that you are transitioning out of, or that you miss, or that you're wondering if you'll ever get back. And then the flip side, if you are working full time out of choice or out of necessity, there's crazy FOMO about what you might be missing at home. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know if there's a more fraught one. I don't know how that played out for you.
It never. And the thing is, it's crazy. It doesn't ever really go away. So I've kind of gone in and out. And I think this is so true for most of us. Like it's painted as the static choice, but it's hardly ever like that, right? Like most of us move in and out of the paid workforce as we add to our family in various ways. Mm-hmm. So for me, like I started off, I was a very young mom. So I think I was like, I think I stayed home for like the first 6 months because literally it would have cost me more to work than, you know, to like pay for daycare and stuff. And then I started working. I was going to school and I was also like waitressing at night. And then I had like a work at home job for a while. Then I was working in an office. Like I did all of the things when my kids were little. And finally, when I had my third was when I really launched my career writing at the time. And from then on, I was basically working from home. And in no time was I ever fully satisfied with where I was, even though I was always happy. Like, I'm pretty adaptable. Like, when I was working in an office, I was happy to be working in an office. When I was at home, I was happy to be at home. And then working at home was my big dream. And I got it. I, like, made it happen. And I was very proud of that. And I was very proud of my career. And even then, even now that my kids are older, I sometimes think longingly about, you know, putting on the heels and like the dream of like going into an office. And I've done that and it turned out it wasn't really for me, but I had enough FOMO that I wanted to try it. And on the flip side, I never really got to be a traditional stay-at-home mom. There was like a 6 month period right at the beginning when I was really like an at-home mom. Otherwise I've always cobbled together something else. Like I've always been an at-home mom who also does X. And there, I have had those moments, especially when my kids were really little, where I'd be kind of sitting, like looking longingly at the moms who can hang out at the gym longer than I can, or who can get together after the gym for coffee and I have to go home now and work, or they get to go, you know, they can go to the play groups, they can do all the things and that's their job. And I never really got to have that. And there's still, I still have a little pang. Like it's like wanting that life I didn't have. It's not even like, for me, it was never really about what, because I didn't really think one would end up being, you know, like my kids would end up better off necessarily one way or the other. It was more about me and like the way I wanted to relate to them and my life with them. And so, yeah, it still happens sometimes. And my kids are old.
Yeah. I have kind of almost experienced a second wave of it as, so last year, my youngest went to kindergarten full-time. And as I mentioned, same school. So, you know, about 20, 25 hours a week, full-time school. And our business was ramping up at the same time. And I didn't even, there was no looking back. In fact, I almost like preloaded up on work the year before that. So that by the time they were all in school full-time, I was like, thank goodness, because I've been working 30 hours a week already. And I never had that time to be like, oh, what would I be doing if I were more stay-at-home mom? Like, would I be in the classroom more? Would I? And again, like you and I know, I'm very happy with my work situation right now, but there's always that other side. So that brings me to another kind of FOMO that you brought up that I find so interesting, and I want you to describe it. But I'm calling it motherhood identity FOMO, and it's more about, less about working, staying home, but more about the type of mom you might have envisioned yourself to be, and kind of having to say no or say goodbye or or opt out of that vision. Can you describe it?
Yeah. Well, so for myself, like, and this probably goes along with my personality, I've always been very, people would say to me, like, do you think of yourself as like a city person or a small town person or a country person? I'd be like, all of the above. Like, I want to do all of those things. And so I really, at different times of my life, would let myself go down these kind of like rabbit hole of dreaming about being this thing. And one of those, I had a very like distinct memory or a very distinct fantasy of being this homeschooling mom out in the country with like chickens and goats and probably seven kids who are running around the farm all day, dirty at all times. And like, you know, like I live in an old farmhouse. Like I totally was all in on that, to the point that at like when my two oldest were very small, I spent a lot of time researching like living off the grid. Like I was really serious about it. And I don't think, for new listeners, I'm divorced. And I don't think my husband at the time and I would have, that I don't think that's something we would have done well together. Right. So I'm glad we didn't go down that path. But it was like a fun thing for me to think about and to just kind of get lost in. And at some point I had to go, I can't even, because I did homeschool for 1 year and I was like, I can't even get through a day as a homeschooler. So none of this is not going to work because I have other things I also really want to do that don't fit.
Yeah.
With that thing. I remember having when Jacob's my oldest, when he was a little baby, having this very distinct fantasy about living in a big city in like a walk up or like a high rise with maybe two kids and my like, you know, my fancy, like very compact stroller and be bopping around the city with two little ones doing all the museums and the art stuff and like all that. Like that was another very distinct fantasy I had. I had a fantasy about living overseas with my family and never coming back. So like I had all these definite like thoughts about these types of people, types of family lives that I could have or would want to have. And I think what I realized is like, here I am, I've been living in the same small town for 10 years, going on 11. And we have a very nice, normal, small town life. My kids go to public school. I work from home. I've done really cool things. I do a lot of really cool, fun stuff, but like those things just didn't work out. And it doesn't mean I can't ever live in the country and have goats and chickens. It's just not going to be at the same time I have toddlers and preschoolers. And it doesn't mean I can't ever live in a city in a high rise, but it's just not ever going to happen when I have a baby, like a baby. It's just those things were not going to coincide, I guess.
Do you know what this reminds me of is like the game MASH that you played at sleepovers when you were growing up and, you know, there was different jobs and different types of people you married. And I think it was much easier for me to try on those imaginary future lives before I had kids. As you're talking, I'm trying to think if I have an equivalent of different family life fantasies that have created some FOMO since I've had kids. I think less so than you. I think I did that more pre-kids. Like, am I going to be a writer living in New York? Am I going to be a dancer? Am I going to, you know, and I could tell you how each of those played out, but it's almost like once I had kids, I settled down on the straight and narrow.
Well, and we just did the episode the other day, The More Than Mom, where we talked about some of those fantasy lives that might have been, right? So that would be a good place to go back and listen as well.
Yeah.
But like, I think that I had kids a lot younger than you,
but I also
am very, like, I can turn on a dime. So if I'm like, I can be on a path and then if I see another path and someone else is enthusiastic about it. Like, I think for me, like choice of partner would have made all the difference.
Yeah.
Because if I could have wound up in any of those lives, if somebody else was like, you know, it sounds like a good idea. I'd be like, yeah, let's do it. Right. But because this is the one that ended up being the simplest and the easiest for everybody. And it just, it's what happened. And I love my life and I wouldn't change anything, but it is interesting. Like, there is a touch of FOMO.
Yeah.
Around all those things.
No, I think a lot of people can relate to that. So let's move on and talk about kind of classic social FOMO. And this could be defined as everyone's at the party except me. And the party, the party could be fill in the blank. I think in new motherhood, especially, it's things, a lot of image related things. Everyone's kids are wearing cuter clothes than mine. There's a lot of this overlaps a lot, I think, with jealousy and comparison. It feels like there's a lot of overlap to me, but it does seem like everybody's doing this thing and I can't or don't have enough money or don't want to. I mean, sometimes like we don't even know if we want these things, but all of a sudden in new motherhood, it feels like everyone is doing them. Is that something you experienced?
Oh my goodness. For me, it was probably being like the ultra natural mom. I really, really wanted to do that and was able to eventually get okay with incorporating the things that were important to me and letting everything else go. But that took me a long time. The professional and family photos. Yes. Like fancy vacations. I didn't really ever care about that. The amazing kid birthday parties. That was almost more like a very quickly passing fancy. Like I'd go, wouldn't that be nice? But before the word nice even comes out, my brain is already going, that already sounds like a lot of work. But I don't know about you, Sarah, but for me, there was like almost a tipping point or a switch that flipped where suddenly I just didn't care anymore. And I think it was maybe around the third kid when I was just like, I'm not going to do those things and I can't care about that. And I need to like, just stop thinking about it and fixating on it. Like the busier and fuller my life got with things I wanted to be doing, the less I worried about what everybody else was doing.
Oh, I think that's such a good point. So maybe it's when we're at our most vulnerable. I think like tied up in FOMO is this belief that not only am I missing out, but that everybody else has it figured out. So I'm like missing out on it's bigger than missing out on a party or a fad or, you know, for me, there's a lot of like home stuff is kind of where I still get FOMO. Like I just, you know, my home doesn't look like
the way you want it,
the way I wanted to. And yeah. I don't cook the meals that other people cook, and they still manage to like be nice to their kids and make dinner. And how do they do that?
That's what you think.
Right. Yeah. But I think it is, it's the fear of missing out, not just on that experience, but on the experience of having it figured out. And of course, what we know now is that they don't really have it figured out.
No, so. Right. And that very much plays into your personality, which is the having it figured out part.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Like there must be an answer and mm-hmm. I must be missing it. And that really is, that's where my FOMO really comes from, is like, there's something out there that I don't know how to do yet. And I must know. So do you ever get social? Now you're much more extroverted. For new listeners here, again, we're kind of playing to our opposites. We actually have a lot in common too, but we're playing up the opposites today. Megan's definitely an extrovert, a fun lover. You're very social. Does social FOMO come up for you now in the form of like, forget kids and motherhood for a second, but just you see that people are out or the weather's good and you wonder what's going on. And like, how does that feel to you now?
I'm thinking about this. You would think so, but no.
Okay.
I think for me, I tend to make things happen when I want them to. Mm. So it plays out a little differently. I think I almost pre-FOMO. I believe there will. Okay. So here's an example. This week, I know we were going to get into later, like kind of where these behaviors, like the behaviors that can come up,
mm-hmm.
but I'll just tackle this one right now. I'm in rehearsals for a show I'm directing, and I get out pretty late at night. And I'm amped. Like by the mm-hmm. time I get out of these rehearsals, like they're dress rehearsals and they go late and I'm directing a bunch of teenagers. And when I get out, I am like, whoa. And I don't have my kids the half of the week. So I would come to a day when I knew that I was going to have like part of the evening used up, the part when all of my friends would be available, right? Because they all have kids and they don't stay up like till 11:30 on a Wednesday for most part. And I would start to get all anxious. Like I'm going to get out of rehearsal. I'm going to be super amped. And I'm not going to have anyone to hang out with because everyone's going to have gone to bed and I'm going to be lonely. So it's not like they're all off doing something without me.
Yeah.
It's almost like I'm pre-planning that I'm going to be lonely
mm-hmm.
and bored and they're all going to be asleep.
Right.
Like there's nothing. I'm like the lack of the party is what's giving me FOMO. Yeah. I'm missing out on something that's not even happening. And so I would start kind of bending myself into all these pretzel shapes, trying to figure out what I can arrange to do at 11:30 on a Wednesday. So that I won't be. And the funny thing is I just went to bed.
Right. That is and it the was simplest fine. Conclusion is often right. the best one.
Right. I just went to bed. It was fine. Like I read a little bit.
Yeah.
But so for me, it was like the fear of missing out on something that doesn't exist. And how do I create it? Like, how do I make this thing that maybe I don't even need?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
It's a little different. I don't typically get like the everyone is doing X, Y, or Z without me because somehow my brain believes, even though I know it's not true, that if I really wanted that thing, I could get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you are, I mean, I think that is your personality. You are often the center of the fun. So it would follow that if you wanted that kind of fun, you could go have it. So yeah, I think that's logical.
But I just have to find the other people and they're all asleep.
Dang it all.
Well, you're still awake because you're on Pacific time.
I know.
But that's like, you know, that's like your evening. Yeah. I feel like I've been very needy this week, like voxing you late at night and stuff. So
I'm good at putting my phone away and I don't even know. Well, not surprisingly, I don't really experience social FOMO because I really
you want to go to bed.
Like to go to bed and stay home. Yeah. I'll just leave it at that. Before we take our break, I want to talk about another, it's kind of a big category, but I think a lot falls under it. And that is, I have a new acronym for you. Do you see it here in our outline? It's pretty great. This is the fear of
yes. FUMKU or FUKMU.
FUKMO. It sounds like it should be inappropriate, but it's not. It's the fear of our kids missing out. And this is something I see a lot. My kids are elementary school age, so we're at the height of activities and academics being acquired rapidly, right? Like we could try soccer, we could try taekwondo, we could take piano. And I live in a pretty competitive parenting culture in Orange County. I love where I live. And I'm not even saying I'm not part of it. I'm sure I am somehow, but it's pretty amped up. And so I think this is something just to be aware of. I think every family responds differently. And I'm not saying that if you do put your kid in piano at age three, that that's a bad thing. That might be the great thing for your kid and your family. But I think it is a slippery slope of, putting our kids in activities and academics out of the fear. It's not just the fear of them missing out. It's almost like the fear if you don't do it now at this young age, XYZ will happen. And that XYZ is like this very, we've done episodes about this, about kind of the pressure on young kids academically. The XYZ is like, at what cost? Like, we're trying to make sure that they can play competitive club soccer when they're 9. So we're making them do it when they're 4. But like, is that really what they want? Is that what we want? This is like a whole topic, but I just want to throw it out there because it really is FOMO. It's fear of our kids somehow missing out on or getting to the party late. Maybe it's not, maybe it's not missing.
But it could also feel like missing out because there is this idea that if you don't get on it, it's, that door has closed. And honestly, in some cases, that's true. Like if these days, if your kid is not playing travel ball by the time they're 9, 10, then they probably aren't going to play on a high school team. And that is, it's too bad. It's unfortunate. Right. But so what is sometimes the feeling that I have, like,
I think I'm all about that. So what, and the reason our listeners know I get kind of fired up about this topic on our show is I feel like if you don't train that so what muscle early on in motherhood, you can accidentally become one of those parents you never thought you'd be, because it's such a pervasive pressure situation that even if you set out with all the right intentions,
you just get caught up in it.
So that's why I kind of get fired up because it starts earlier than you think. So,
I'll speak to that on my side because I have older kids now. So I definitely had a lot of that when my kids were probably like early elementary school aged. For me, less about sports because I don't care as much personally about sports. Although I did want my kids to be athletic if they wanted to be, and they all dabbled. They all played baseball or soccer or something for a little while. But for me, I think it was more like music and artistic stuff. And, you know, I kind of just missed out on making sure my kids took piano lessons. Like, they weren't really interested in theater and choir when they were younger. And I kept trying to figure out how to get them in there. And I kept feeling like I was failing. Like, what was the class or the thing that they were supposed to have been exposed to give them this desire or drive or talent that they now don't have, you know? I still think to myself every now and then, like, if only I had taken dance classes when I was a kid, where could I be now with it? So the funny thing is my kids now, like the oldest ones are all the way through high school. And my middle two, my younger two boys now they're going to be going into 8th and 10th grade. So they're like a pretty far down the path.
Yeah.
Just in the last year, my 15-year-old son decided to pick up the guitar and start playing it. His older brother decided around the same age to pick up a guitar and start playing it. They have a band. Well, my 15-year-old has a band. My older son plays with a friend. Clara has been making awesome art in her room, and all I do is buy her supplies. Owen took up like competitive yo-yoing. I guess my point is I didn't really do any of those things. Like, those aren't things I made them do or even really expose them to beyond my own interest. And they just did it. The world offers kids a lot of options. And I do think eventually they'll gravitate toward the thing that's right for them. And if you support them, and that might mean buying an instrument or like that could mean a variety of things, but I just don't think we have to like feel like there's this window.
Right.
Because I missed the window. Yeah. Right. But my kids figured it out on their own.
I love that. And I also love thinking about the flip side of any FOMO, but in particular, this kind of kid FOMO. The flip side, if we're putting them in these pressure situations out of the fear of missing out, what they're actually missing out on, and I could go on and on about what that is, but free time, sleep, relaxation, time at home, you know,
the ability to figure out what they want to do.
Yes. Like being bored, like the list goes on and on. The missing out on that also has consequences. So if that helps to think about it that way. So anyway, again, that is a big topic and we've covered it before, but it occurred to me how closely tied it is to FOMO. And I got to use a new acronym called FUCMO.
But I think to me, FUCMO sounds like something Marie Kondo would do.
Yeah, it does. It does have a Kondo-like ring to it. Okay, well, we need to take a break, but we're going to come right back and keep going with this topic. So we'll be right back.
So can I just share that my kids are like obsessed with zits? So Clara had her first pimple a couple of weeks ago. I kind of secretly think it was just a mosquito bite, but she was convinced and she could not get over it. Owen's 13 now, so he's got a sprinkling at most times, like one on his nose or over his lip or whatever. And he's just like kind of can't stop thinking about it. So it just takes me back to a time when I was a teen and acne was so stressful and I would do like anything I could to lessen the chance that I'd have a breakout. So of course, I want to help my kids take good care of their skin so that they also don't have to deal with as much acne. So one thing I didn't know, Sarah, is that hair care products can actually cause certain kinds of acne. So we're really happy to welcome Teenology as a sponsor. Teenology has shampoo, conditioner, body wash, and styling products designed to help teens avoid breakouts on their foreheads, hairlines, backs, and chests. Teenology products work because they don't contain any of the sulfates, parabens, or oils that are found in many hair care products that can clog pores and actually cause pimples.
Also, I just think this is really fun because as a parent of a preteen, there's so much that's out of their control. There's so many things they're growing out of and having to give up as they get older. And Allegra just was so excited to find out that there was a product line that was really meant for her age. And it's something I'm really trying to empower her to do is take care of her hair and her body and herself and personal hygiene and all of that. And I just feel like it just felt special to be able to say, this is just for you.
Yeah, I totally agree. And actually when the box came, Clara was so excited and couldn't wait till I opened it. The products smell so good. They're really a treat to use. Clara loves the pink grapefruit detangler. And Owen and Will have been fighting over the lemonade styling cream. So it's pretty much a hit in our house. So we want to help you help your teenagers avoid breakouts this summer with a special offer from Teenology. You're going to get 15% off your entire order when you go to teenshampoo.com/themomhour. Again, that's teenshampoo.com/themomhour. And you're going to get 15% off your entire order of Teenology products.
It's a great deal. So Megan, when we started this podcast, one of the things we wanted to do was to be real, to tell authentic stories about our lives as moms. And that's still our goal all this time later. But one of the things about that is that you and I haven't experienced every aspect of motherhood. We haven't dealt with certain traumas or loss or infertility, for example. And it's really important that those stories get told authentically too. We just can't always be the ones to do them. So let me tell you guys about a new podcast that just launched called Unspoken Stories. It's produced by The March of Dimes and hosted by actress and advocate Tatiana Ali, who is also a mom. And it features real stories about what happens when things don't always go according to plan. In Unspoken Stories, you're going to hear from parents who've dealt with illness, loss, premature birth, and some really hard stuff. But here's the thing. When I listened, I found the tone really uplifting. These are parents who are thriving in spite of the hand they were dealt, and I really felt connection and empathy with them.
I totally agree. It is actually a really inspiring listen.
So we get asked all the time to cover these kind of tough topics on this show. And while we do our best, I think stories told from personal experience are really what people connect to. And when that's not something that we can offer you guys, we're so glad to have a place to send you. So that place is Unspoken Stories, and you can listen for free wherever you get your podcasts or by heading to unspokenstories.org. Again, just subscribe to Unspoken Stories free wherever you get your podcasts or learn more by visiting unspokenstories.org.
Okay, so before we go on, I feel like these things like bump up against other concepts.
Yeah.
And especially when we talk about image things, like when you watch social media and you get jealous of people for their vacations or whatever it is, there is FOMO and there is kind of this keeping up with the Joneses, which can also be that competitive parenting achievement. So what is the difference? Because there is a difference.
I think there's a difference. And when we were preparing for this, I found myself kind of thinking about, wait, is this more about competition and keeping up with the Joneses? And I think, first of all, I think new motherhood is a time where you're vulnerable to both of these things. And I think there's some overlap, but I think there's a difference. I think, to me, the difference is that FOMO usually represents something that you really do want. Now, maybe it might be misplaced FOMO, like you were talking about, like, do you actually want to go out at 11:30 at night on a Wednesday? Or is it more about wanting to make sure that your friends are available and engaged with you, whatever.
Right.
But FOMO at its core probably represents something that you really do want or that is important to you. Whereas keeping up with the Joneses often has nothing to do with what you actually want and more just what society.
You want people to think that you have or are able to get. The other thing that I think is really, this really plays into new motherhood is that, and it's almost like a third category that's in there. So it's like you truly want it, but you've also been convinced it is the best thing for your baby. And you're in such a vulnerable place, your baby or small child, that like it becomes very difficult to discern between what matters and what doesn't, what's really important down the road and what won't be. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like all of these, like you feel like you want the thing because somehow you've been convinced that wanting the thing makes you a better mom.
Yes.
Getting the thing makes you a better mom. And via those two things, now you look like a better mom. So you get the status. It's like all of those, they kind of all meld together.
Yeah. And all of that is makes it so hard to tap into or remember what you actually want. I mean, that's, I think, what one of the, you know, really struggles of early motherhood is all of those things conspire to just cloud and drown out the simplest things, which is what's best for my family and what do I really want? And that sounds so simple, but yeah, I think both FOMO and keeping up with the Joneses or competition can kind of cloud those. So it's good.
You know, I think you and I have always in this show come back to like a couple of concepts. One of them being that we're not doing things because it's the thing that feels the best today, or because it's what people around us are telling us to do today, but like, what do we want to have done in a year or three or five or 10 years? And then the other one is anytime we're doing something because someone else thinks it's a good idea, we're probably making the wrong choice. Right. Like anytime, I feel like I've said that now on the show 100 times, but anytime I find myself with a choice and I make the choice based on what I think someone else will think, it's the wrong choice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so, it's worth saying 100 times on this show.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I thought it would be interesting to talk about what kind of behavior for us, you and me specifically, but also moms in general, when we feel this pang of FOMO, what kind of behavior comes out in us? And I don't mind going first because I think mine will be very different. But anytime I feel stressed or threatened in some way, my reflex behavior is to try to control things. And one of the things I thought of, and we didn't talk about this in the first half, but I have a very specific kind of FOMO around my kids, and that is information FOMO. And I guarantee there are some of you out there, Megan, you can laugh and others can laugh, but I know there's others of you out there like this. And what I mean by information FOMO is I don't like to miss like announcements and information that come from school. I don't like to not have prepared or read the newsletter. And I think in times of when I'm chill, it doesn't rear its ugly head. Like it's like, oh yeah, I can keep up. And in fact, having 3 kids is great because I'm so busy that I really do miss stuff. And I realize it's not the end of the world. It's going to be okay if I didn't read the class newsletter. But as a general rule, my personality tries to like obsessively collect all that information. And I was telling you before we recorded, Megan, that I have a really hard time missing out on any kind of an information session. And I'm laughing because it's like, that's not a fun thing to go to. It's not like a party.
I'm just smiling. I'll chime in a minute.
I know. I know. Cause this is, we're so different, but I was thinking about it. It comes from a place of kind of anxiety about if I don't have all of the right information, I can't do the right thing. Right. It's coming back to very much like my personality and how that works. And so it will look like, you know, obsessively checking all the boxes and making sure I've read everything. And, you know, Allegra's going to sleepaway camp in 4 weeks or whatever. No, maybe 3 weeks. But I mean, the packing list has been printed and she and I've looked at it together multiple times already. So it looks to me what it looks like. If I'm like the therapist on the outside looking at myself, it looks like kind of obsessive preparation for something that that is anxiety producing. So anyway, that's just, it's so different than I know what you're going to talk about that I thought I would throw it out there.
Well, what strikes me, and I like lists of things, but like I resist looking at anything before I have to, because to me, the FOMO is like using life energy on something that I don't need to use it on. And there's like, I have a real weird resistance around that. So I don't like to be late. Like I like to be prompt if someone's expecting me, and if I feel like there's a good reason for me to be there at that time.
Yeah.
But for things where there's an obligation for me to show up to something at what I feel is an unreasonably early time, for example.
Yeah.
I will start to get anxious about what I could have been doing with that time better and will actively resist being on time. Like I will actively come up with other things to do during that time just to almost prove that I could use the time better.
You don't want your time wasted. Like your FOMO is about somebody else taking that time that could have been better spent.
Yes.
Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, it's not how I am, but I totally get
that. But it's like that plays out very, very differently. And it could make you look obsessive or rigid, I guess. And it could make me look lackadaisical or inconsiderate. And I think it's just because we're both in our own heads about the way that we want to manage our time. And I think this is very much a motherhood thing because we have limited time. We have to make the most of it. And for you, making the most of your time is making sure you've crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's and done it right so you don't have to do it again.
Right.
And for me, making the most of my time is fitting everything in.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Making all the pieces go together.
Yeah. No, I think it kind of perfectly fits with our two personalities. Okay.
Yeah.
So a few more, I think, behaviors that FOMO can bring out in everybody. One, and we touched on this with the kids' activities, but even with little tiny kids, I think FOMO can make you or cause you to put your kids in situations that they don't feel great about. And that's kind of, it can be kind of a bummer. I'm thinking of like, if you have FOMO about having like making sure your holiday is perfect, for example, and we've all done this, you might look back and realize like you forced your kids into matching outfits, made them stay up way past their bedtime, and everyone turned out okay. I am not suggesting that you somehow scarred your kids for life, but as a pattern, if we get into this pattern of letting FOMO rule our decision making, it can mean that we're putting our kids in situations where they're, you know, they're overtired, they're cranky, they're not having fun. At what cost? Right.
Right.
So that's the, again, I'm not out to say anybody did the wrong thing by.
We've all done it.
Yeah. We've all done it, but that's what, that's a behavior it can bring out. Let's see. Do you have any?
Oh, I have several that are kind of about me personally, but I think a lot of people will relate. So, we already talked. So experience FOMO, which for me is the kind of FOMO where I just want to do all the things, can make me say yes to things that, because I want to, but then to feel like I'm not doing them well. Like to feel like I've taken on now so much that the really important things to me, like it's kind of the urgent versus the important. Mm-hmm. I take on the thing that's right in front of me. That's finite, that I think, oh, I could do this because I can, like I can juggle a lot of balls, but then there's like the important underlying things that I somehow am not getting to. Mm-hmm. Then those things never go away. That's one thing because I'm such like a project-based person, like I'm a person who like the thing in front of me is what I'm really good at doing. Mm-hmm. But the maintenance stuff sometimes slips. Mm-hmm. So I'm really good at knocking something out because I have to, but then there's a lot of things that I don't maybe necessarily have to do that I should be doing, right? That like are really important things. And they tend to get short shrift. So that's one.
Yeah.
Social FOMO. I talked a little bit about this earlier, but like, sometimes it leads to me putting what I perceive as other people's social needs, which often are just my social needs in disguise. Anyone an Enneagram person out there? Yeah. We did a whole episode about it, but I'm a two. And I sometimes project my need for social, interaction.
Validation.
Feedback, validation as someone else needing it. And then go out of my way to deliver on that need when it's really just my own want. Mm-hmm. It's a weird circular pattern I get myself into, but I really have a very strong need for solitude and quiet too. And I don't always, honor that need. And then I guess the third would be identity FOMO. When I'm wishing that I was the, you know, homeschooling mom in the country, skipping around with my chickens and goats, I can fail to look around at what I do have and really be happy and satisfied with it. And I think that's something probably everybody can relate to.
I think everyone can relate to. And like we said, it can kind of cloud like the fact that you actually have what you mostly wanted right in front of you.
Right. Exactly.
I was just going to throw it out there that FOMO can make you spend money and time on things that you don't necessarily want or need. And I mean, everything from the Target trips that are relatively superficial, but also, you know, like bigger things too. And that goes back to the keeping up with the Joneses, but it can definitely affect our behavior patterns around how we spend time and money. And then I'm glad you touched on that kind of not appreciating what you have, because the other one I made a note of was FOMO can really like take you right out of the present moment. And I know that's a catchphrase that we hear all the time. But if you are experiencing FOMO, really experiencing it, you're not in the present moment. You're either future casting about what you could be doing and trying to figure out how to get that thing, or you're looking back or like having some kind of regrets about the past. So you're not in the present. So that too.
Those are all bad things.
I know.
FOMO makes us bad.
Darn it all, FOMO. Well, then let's shift gears a little bit and talk about some healthy ways to cope with FOMO. So does anything come to mind that has worked well for you? I feel like you seem like you've thought about this.
Yes, I do. I think about it a lot, actually. For me, look, whenever I find myself in a pattern, because I'm so action-oriented, I'm not the kind of person who is paralyzed by things like FOMO. I'm the opposite. So I'm the person who would take any uncomfortable, like discomfort or opportunity and use it as a springboard to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. I'm better when I don't sometimes do things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the better choice for me is just to notice it and like go, why do I want to do this? Do I want to do this thing? Is this actually something I need? Is this something that, that actually is this, you know, shiny penny in front of me or this like flashy thing that I'm going for? Is that the thing that's going to support the life I want? Or is this boring thing, this call that I have to make, actually the thing that, I won't actually see any results from?
Mm-hmm.
Like ever, maybe. Like I have to make this call. It's super boring. This is like a detail of my life I don't want to deal with. I'm going to make this call and I'm not going to feel any rush. There's not going to be a dopamine hit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to do anything for me except create more of a foundation for the life that I want. And I just have to trust that that's happening, even though I don't see it. It's like this weird. So it's just for me, it's talking to myself like constantly.
Yeah.
And just going like, why am I doing this? Right. Why am I making this choice? Why am I saying yes to this thing? And I've gotten way, way better at it with age, but it takes.
Yeah.
It takes time.
No, I think that's so good. I was going to say finding ways to recognize and appreciate the things in front of you. I know we've all heard that a gratitude journal or some kind of gratitude practice is healthy. And I think there's even science behind it. Mm-hmm. So whatever that looks like for you, I think it can be as simple as writing stuff down every day or just noticing the things around you that not only are great, but are exactly what you wished for. When you were having FOMO 10 years ago because you wanted a house full of kids and this like wonderful chaotic life of driving kids around and play dates. And that was like, you had the FOMO for the thing that you have now.
And now you have it. Yes.
And now you have it. So I don't have a specific gratitude practice that I can recommend. And it's probably something, I mean, that I think we all benefit from it, but I think whatever you need to do to notice and appreciate the things that you currently have. And then the other side of that is, and I do this self-talk quite a bit, whatever you think somebody else has, they are having hardcore FOMO about something. And it might even be something that you have, right? Like the person, it's so cliche, but the mom who seems like she has it all together is for sure struggling. I mean, there's no way she's not struggling with something. You may or may not know what it is. She may be covering it up via social media, or you just aren't aware of it. But whatever, when we're having that, especially the social media induced FOMO of the pretty house and the nice vacations and all of that, it just, we have to remember that we are not seeing the whole story and that that person is well acquainted with the feeling of FOMO.
They absolutely are. I want to back up really quick and talk about the gratitude thing again, because I know that Sarah and I both, we both resist sometimes things that feel trendy. We both, we don't like to jump on board and then the gratitude thing. So I journal and that's how I work through a lot of these things, but I don't like sit down and go every day, you know, today I'm grateful for. So if you're also resistant to that, one thing that has been helpful for me is to like literally go back in time and say, what would 25-year-old Megan have wanted from her life? And then to look at like, where was I then? And where am I now? And could I even have imagined that this is what I would have accomplished by then? Like, no, I would actually be blown away. So that it's like, that really helps because you also see how, how satisfaction is such a moving target.
Yes.
And you get something and then you are already over it and you want the next thing. That's so human. And we all do it. But it doesn't, it's not accurate. Like you have to back up and see the big picture and like the path that you've taken and the dips and the struggles and the challenges and how you've overcome them. And they're so easy to forget, even in a more finite, like when you and I are talking about, like when we'll say, oh, remember when we were just launching the show and we were trying to do this or that thing. And then we'll be like, when was that again? And then we look back and see how much we actually did in a year. We're always like, wow.
Yeah.
Because when it's happening, you don't notice what you're doing.
Right.
You don't really see it.
We need somebody celebrating our milestones like we celebrate our kids, you know? Just to.
And sometimes your friends can be really good at that too. Like sometimes if you're feeling like really, like you can't see it, you can ask a friend and they'll be like, no, of course you did. This, these are all the things you did. And I, to me, that's more useful than a, than me trying to sit down and go, today I am grateful for.
Right. No, I think that's really good. And I think it's all related. I mean, all of this self-awareness is good. And I think you kind of said this, but FOMO and jealousy is another, you know, kind of form of this, is can be a very instructive and a great motivator to do something that you really would benefit from. So I guess what I mean by it is, if it's a general social FOMO, like you're not being included or you wish your life was this way, that's a little different. But let's say that you have FOMO about, you know, painting your front door yellow and hanging a really pretty wreath on it. That might be like an achievable project. Megan, you said you're really project oriented. That might be a motivator to then take the next step and get the thing you fear you're missing out on. Like, you know, go do that thing. And I think what stops a lot of us is the overwhelm of kind of feeling like we're missing out on all of it. But maybe there's one thing of that. Maybe it's that you sign up for a photography class because you feel like everybody's pictures are great or whatever. And maybe there is something you can do for yourself that's actionable and tangible and really does, you know, move you forward in a meaningful way, not just a keeping up in the Joneses way. So I think it can be a motivator too, if it's kind of harnessed in the right way.
Let's just talk really quick about envy. Because I think envy, first of all, gets conflated with jealousy. They're not the same thing.
Okay, and
I will in a sec. And then envy also is given a bad rap. And I actually have found envy to be useful at times. So envy is when you want something someone else has.
Okay.
Jealousy is when you're afraid you're going to lose something you have.
Oh, I don't think I ever understood that.
I think I actually looked it up when I was blogging a lot because I was very confused about the difference between the two things. And like for me, envy had sometimes been to me a useful thing, like in my career. I'm not a very jealous person, but I did sometimes, I'd look at something cool someone had accomplished and go, ooh, I really want that. Like, I want that thing that they did. They were able to write this amazing book and I want to feel that feeling, right? So I would envy that thing and then it would motivate me to kind of try to figure out how I could also have that thing. It really wasn't a negative emotion because I could also be very happy for them at the same time.
So that's such a good clarification. So jealousy would be like someone has taken or might take what you have. So you might be jealous in a relationship of someone who's closer to your bestie than you are. That would be jealousy because you're threatened.
You're threatened. But I think sometimes when we look at what other people have, this is where it gets a little confusing, but I'm going to do my best to muddle through. I think sometimes our brains take what is actually envy and turn it into jealousy because we perceive that if that person has it, I can't. So like if you tomorrow, you know, redecorated your living room, right? And I loved it. I might be a little envious and think, oh man, that I would love to have a living room that was so beautiful, good for Sarah. Or my brain, my lizard brain, my reptilian brain could go a step further. And sometimes it's imperceptible. Like we don't even know we're doing it, but it's like, because Sarah has that, I can't.
Yeah,
because she has something I don't have that allowed her to get that. Like I've now taken this thing that I want. And because you have it, I've made it as something that I can't have. It's just this weird thing that our brain, it's like a trick that our brains do. But I think it's important because to me, envy doesn't have to be negative. Like it can be really positive motivator if we look at it in the right spirit. And it's because I don't want to take away your living room.
Right.
I want you to have that. Right. Like I want you to have success. I want you to have happy kids. So I want you to have all those good things. But if I start feeling like if you have them for some reason now, I can't have them, then I don't really want you to have them, do I?
Yes.
Because I want them for me.
Okay. My mind is blown because I really didn't ever know or understand or even think about the difference.
Yeah. So I just think it's useful sometimes if you look at what someone else has and the feeling is more negative than good for them. Like why?
Yeah.
Just ask yourself why.
I love that.
I can't solve it. But no. It's a good question to ask, though.
Well, I have one more question that I think would be great to end on. And maybe we can just both answer briefly. But do you have any kids in your five who experience FOMO at a higher degree than others? Or have there been times when you've had to parent a kid experiencing FOMO and just look it straight in the eye from the other side as a mom?
Sure. They all have different, very different kinds of FOMO. I would say just to throw the three younger ones out under the bus here. Yeah. Clara has like she has kind of what other people are doing FOMO.
Okay.
So she really, and because she's the youngest, I think that's a very typical thing. She sees her older siblings doing cool things mm-hmm. and she wants to be like, hers is more experiential. She yeah. wants to be experiencing those things, excelling at those things. She like has a couple YouTubers that she's really into and she wants to like already have had yeah. like a YouTube career and she's 10 years old and I don't want her to even like have an account, you know? So that's one. Owen, I think, is more possession.
Yeah.
He really wants what other people have. He wants a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
He is the one who will come to me like the minute he has money in his hand and go, so there's this thing that I've been looking at and now I have $20 and can I buy it? Like he already knows, like in his mind, he already has it all figured out. And then for Will, it's social.
Mm-hmm.
He's my most social kid and he cannot miss a party. Like his brain is a calendar of social events and dates. And he's really good at keeping up with everything because it's very important to him.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to be a sophomore. So it's natural, but he's always been that way. So yeah. like in his mind, he'll come to me like really, really proactively because he knows that like his dad and I, we have opposite schedules and sometimes things get missed because he's got an event here, but John's already planned something for him to do that weekend. So he will very proactively come to me and say, okay, so on the 20th, it's Hayden's birthday party. I'm going to leave in the morning. I'm going to go to the party. I'll be back that night. Then I know we have a camping trip the next day, so I'll make sure that I'm home early enough. Like he's got like it all figured out. He's like the
family social director.
He is.
That's very convenient.
Really is. It's convenient for him.
Yeah.
he really only manages his own yeah. calendar, right? But it is useful because he's the busiest and yeah. he manages it. I don't really have to do much but drive him.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is helpful.
That's so
I don't know. What about, so when you say like, I guess the only way I manage it is just to have to sometimes say, we can't do that thing right now and it's yeah. going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like Owen, right now is not the time for you to spend the last $20 you have on this thing. What would happen if you waited 24 hours yeah. or 48 hours? Maybe something else would come up you want that money for more. And then with Clara, it's like right now it's a lot of saying no to Clara and I hate it, but I,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
she can't do it all.
Welcome to motherhood.
Yeah. Exactly. yeah, exactly. What about your kids?
Well, I mean, the one who comes most top of mind is Violet. She's the youngest yeah. and her FOMO is just the classic FOMO. We've talked on the show about she really has a very hard time playing by herself or being by herself when in fact she has a great imagination and I think if she could settle into it, I've given her lots of opportunities to learn to play on her own. But to her, if there is fun to be had elsewhere with her older siblings, she must be in the middle of it. And it causes a lot of, you know, sibling strife. And it causes her to, we've talked about this, to almost like have hurt feelings before anybody has even hurt her feelings. Like,
yep.
and then have
such a classic younger.
Yeah, exactly.
Thing, yeah.
And so that's like FOMO in all capital letters, like tattooed on her forehead. So I had to think about what it looks like in the other two. Reed is my very kind of inflexible, like more like me type of personality. And so for him, what would feel like FOMO would be when plans change or things don't go what he's expecting. So he's always, you can see it in his face. He has a fear of missing out on the thing that he's expecting. So changing plans or having to stay flexible is really hard for him. And he's 9, he's gotten a lot better and we've worked on it, but it's almost like an anticipatory FOMO.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. So he thinks it's going to go awry even before anything has gone awry.
Yeah. Or if there's one little hint, you know, we're running late, so we might not get to do that thing. His mind is in full panic. So that's like a different thing that we've worked through. And Allegra, gosh, I'm trying to think of the way she experiences FOMO. It's going to start happening because she's going into mm-hmm. middle school. Social dynamics are changing. She does not like to be late or to miss things that would be fun. I mean, that's kind of classic FOMO with her friends, but I think I'll have to get back to you on that one.
Yeah. Maybe well, and it's sometimes like with the older two, I really wasn't coming up with anything. So yeah. It might just be, they're just normal.
Yeah. Yeah. She's pretty even keel.
Just normal.
No
unlike
kids.
Unlike the rest of us.
No kids are normal.
That's true.
Okay. Well, we are going to wrap up, but just another welcome to our new listeners who came over from Coffee and Crumbs. We're so glad you popped over. Hopefully you will stick around, subscribe to our show in the show notes, which are at themomhour.com. And this is episode 219. We will link up all the places to find us. We're just the Mom Hour on social. We're pretty easy to find. So be sure to say hello if you come find us. I will also link up a couple of other episodes you might want to check out next in our show notes. And we have a page just for new listeners. It's at themomhour.com/new. And we always round up our favorite episodes kind of by age and stage on that page. So if you're looking for more, our archives are a bit daunting. We're like over the, 300 with all of our bonuses and stuff. So longtime listeners, we're glad you're here too. And thanks for sticking around. Megan, this was really fun.
This was really fun.
We'll talk to you guys soon. All right, everyone, thanks so much for listening. And if you haven't already, head over to coffeeandcrumbs.net/podcast. There you'll find all the episodes of the Coffee and Crumbs podcast, including the one on motherhood and FOMO, which is available today. You can also check out Coffee and Crumbs wherever you're listening to this podcast, and be sure to subscribe to their show. Check them out if you haven't already. And Coffee and Crumbs is also on Instagram at Coffee and Crumbs. We had so much fun collaborating with Indiana, Ashley, and April on this little pairing of podcasts. Let us know what you think. Shoot us an email and definitely go check out their show as well. Thanks, everybody.